Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Wadowitz versus Montgomery.
May it please the court. Mr. Moody will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, Mr. Holmes. This is an official and governmental community state where the only argument is over the good faith element of deeming consent. The officer William Wadowitz, responded to a call that was perceived to be an emergency call. He selected his route, and he elected to proceed to that call on an emergency basis. The first leg of his call took him from a side street onto a main artery in Waco, Texas. In order to negotiate that intersection, he activated lights, siren, air horn. Saw that traffic was acknowledging his signals and stopping, and proceeded into the intersection. Could not see clearly into a third traffic lane, entered that traffic lane, and collided with the respondent. Sergeant James Smith, a veteran patrol sergeant with the Fort Worth Police Department, reviewed the facts, the deposition testimony in the case, and gave us an affidavit in support of our motion for summary judgment that said, in his opinion, a reasonably prudent peace officer under the same or similar circumstances could have elected to do what Officer Wadowitz had elected to do, and could have selected and pursued the route that Officer Wadowitz elected to pursue. The respondents named as an expert, Mr. Daniel Ramsey, a former Temple police officer, whose deposition was taken. And at his deposition, his testimony was that he, too, had no problem with the course of action that Officer Wadowitz had elected to pursue and agreed that the route that Officer Wadowitz selected was the most appropriate one under the circumstances.
Would you think that in every case there will be some judgment evidence like that or trial evidence like that that would be presented by the city or the officer? In other words, that type of evidence probably would be obtained in every type of case like this.
Evidence like we have from Sergeant Smith?
Yes.
I don't know if that's true, Your Honor. For example, in its opinion, the Court of Appeals cited or gave as an example driving through a school zone on an afternoon at the time when the school was letting out at 80 miles per hour. Now, I'll talk about why I don't think that alone is sufficient, but I'll take that and go from there to here. We have to look at why the officer did what he did. In the scenario where he's driving through the school zone at that speed, we have to look at why he did that. Was he just trying to catch someone who busted a stop sign and is trying to get away? If that's the case, I don't know that we would be able to find another police officer who would say that he acted reasonably. But on the other hand, is he on his way to stop another Oklahoma City bomber from blowing up a building or to disrupt someone who's shooting up customers at a Luby's cafeteria? If so, then we probably could. I think we have to look at what was done in connection with why it was done, as Sergeant Smith did in this case when we got the evidence. But I don't think we could get it all there.
When is that a jury issue and when is that a legal issue?
It's a jury issue when there is a disagreement over the same thing. But in this case, there's no disagreement over the same thing. The issue here is what should we be looking at to decide whether or not there was good faith.
The whole approach or the left turn?
Yes, sir. Had Mr. Ramsey said that no, there is no other reasonably prudent peace officer who under these circumstances would have proceeded to that call on an emergency basis or would have used that route or would have tried to get through that intersection on an emergency basis, then I think we would have a fact issue. But that is not what Mr. Ramsey said.
Counselor, you said, did you say would have or could have?
Could have.
Okay. Maybe I misunderstood.
If I said would, I may have said would have and not intended to be judged.
So you're saying Mr. Ramsey would, if he had said no reasonable prudent officer could have.
Yes.
proceeded as he did under these circumstances. The fact issue on good faith would be joined for...
I believe it would. But that's not what he said. He said that no reasonably prudent peace officer would have entered that third lane of traffic when Officer Waterwitz did without being able to see clearly what was coming. So we are talking about two different things there.
Did you even join issue on whether the officer was negligent under these circumstances or not?
No, sir, we did not, because we did not feel that negligence was relevant to the issue of the officer's immunity.
Do you take the position the officer could be negligent and yet be in good faith?
Yes, Your Honor. The immunity defense, and this comes, the authority for this proposition is yours truly, but I believe it's accurate based on the case law, that the immunity defense contemplates that there will be negligence and is intended to protect the public servant from his own negligence as long as he acts in good faith in carrying out a discretionary function in the course of his employment.
Mr. Moody, one of my concerns, I believe I understand your position, which is the officer has looked at all the circumstances, decide the decision to act, is it reasonable then or not, as opposed to the very narrow question of should they have made this left turn. I think I understand your position, but in chambers where the police officers, one of my difficulties with chambers is at what point is this decision process to occur? If a motorcycle runs the stop sign and the officer decides to pursue, is that the point that the police officers, the experts decide, well, could a reasonable officer have decided to do that? Or having made the decision to pursue, the race is now at 100 miles an hour. Are the police officers supposed to evaluate the decision at that point? Well, it's now at 100 miles an hour. Now, do we continue the pursuit or don't we? So I'm not sure Chambers answers that question. Coming back to this one, if the police officer is going to respond to notice of a crime, maybe severe, maybe a robbery in progress, going to respond, and the street is clear, and there's no one around, then the police officer says, that's great, I would respond. But suppose they do come upon a school building that's having a firearm for some reason, and the children have now been asked to get out of school. So he comes upon a scene that's different than the scene that was anticipated when the police officer began the pursuit. Doesn't that fly against your argument? Wouldn't you have to have someone say the circumstances have changed during the pursuit? Don't we have to evaluate the circumstances at that time? When he entered the highway, knowing he didn't have a view, doesn't that change the circumstances that you're asking us to say set for all purposes the good faith of the officer in neglecting the pursuit?
I didn't mean to imply that once the decision to act is taken, that the transaction is frozen, that he has good faith from that moment forward. I think that as the officer proceeds, he must go through a constant process of reevaluating the need to act balanced against the risk of harm to the public.
So how is that inconsistent with the position of the Montgomery's here, that having come upon this street, having seen the circumstances of this street, having an obstructed view, those are the circumstances that have to be weighed against the decision to pursue.
Because the Montgomery's are taking what the officer did or how the officer did it and isolating on that fact and ignoring why the officer did what he did. If you're going to just isolate on the act, on the fact, what he did, how he did it, you're talking about was he negligent or wasn't. And that cannot decide the immunity issue. You have to also look at what went into the officer's decision-making process.
How do we know from this examination of the expert that he wasn't taking all of that into account in answering the question about this particular decision?
because I specifically asked the expert, and it's part of the summary judgment evidence that was presented, are you complaining about the fact that this officer needed to get to that call quickly on an emergency basis? No. Are you complaining about the route that he selected? No. Are you complaining about the fact that he activated emergency equipment in an effort to get through the intersection on an emergency basis? No. What are you complaining about?
I understand, but how do you know that he didn't, that all of, that he wasn't making this balance that you say needs to be made? Of all those factors that he's not complaining of against the risk in this particular factor.
Your Honor, I can only tell you that he didn't say he was. He didn't say he was taking
it. If he had said it, would that be different? Looks to me like your argument has to go further.
The Court of Appeals in the dissent says what I would say, that when you look at simply entering that left, that lane to make a turn, you're looking at it too narrowly. You have to look at the whole transaction.
But if the expert said, and so I am, then what?
If the expert said, so
I am and you're not, and we just disagree. Or I am and you are, and we just disagree.
Then I think we would still have an argument here about what needs to be looked at. Should the expert look at, if the expert is looking at just the left turn, it's our position you can't be looking at the whole transaction. That's what we're saying. If we're just going to look at that one act, let's say, for example, that Officer Waterwitz had successfully negotiated that intersection and made his left turn onto Valley Mills Drive. Valley Mills Drive, three lanes, heavily trafficked. He proceeds down Valley Mills Drive with his lights and siren on in heavy traffic. Then something happens. Well, what are we going to look at there? Are we going to look at the officer's perceived need to get where he's going promptly and his method of doing it? Or are we going to isolate on the officer should not have been in this lane, or he should have swerved this way instead of that way, or he should have applied his brakes here instead of there, or he should have driven 5 miles slower than he was driving? If we're going to look at those minutiae, then we are always going to be able to find someone who is going to be able to say in an affidavit and say sincerely, this officer could not, no reasonable peace officer would have elected to swerve to the left lane under these circumstances. And we be, or at least we create a fact issue on good faith that way, when in fact all that affidavit is saying is that this officer was negligent. And we're using negligence to create a fact issue.
Don't you think that perhaps Ramsey's affidavit creates a fact issue as to whether the officer was plainly incompetent, or do you say the affidavit would have to conclude that?
I don't say that there would have to be any magic words in the affidavit, Your Honor, but this court has said that the immunity defense protects all except those who are plainly incompetent or knowing violations of the law. I don't think we need to talk about knowing violations of the law here. I don't think the officer was in violation of the law, but wasn't plainly incompetent in entering that lane. The court hasn't defined for us what plainly incompetent means, but I think it means something that shocks the conscience. For example,
the school zone.
The school, 80 miles an hour through a school zone to catch someone who ran a stop sign would shock my conscience. Or approaching a red light intersection with lights and siren on and being afraid to proceed and so just close your eyes and stick your foot in the carburetor and go, that would shock my conscience. But Officer Waterwitz's conduct does not shock my conscience, and because it doesn't shock my conscience, I don't believe he was plainly incompetent.
But has an issue been drawn? The question is, has issue been joined, this is a summary judgment case, has issue been joined with regards to the officer's good faith and bad faith? And you're saying no issue has not been joined?
I don't believe it has yet, because,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, go ahead and finish.
Because, as I said, we need to look at what the officer did and why he did it. What he did was elect to proceed through that intersection on an emergency basis.
But we have, you know, a very experienced expert witness
Court of Appeals said, investigated between 4,000 to 5,000 accidents who viewed the depositions, viewed the all the facts, the officers, statements, everything, and concluded, officer, you were wrong.
Wrong in entering the left lane, not wrong in electing the course of action.
But the collision occurred on the left lane.
Yes, it did.
All right, so that's the question, you know. This expert said you were wrong in entering that lane. Why isn't that get you, why isn't the issue joined?
Because what the expert is saying there is you were negligent in entering that left lane. Negligence is not sufficient.
If you use the word instead of the left lane, the intersection, would that change analysis?
Was the officer, if Mr. Ramsey had said the officer should not have used his emergency equipment and tried to get through the intersection with it?
So, regardless of using emergency equipment, because he said no reasonably prudent officer under the same or similar circumstances could have believed that entering the intersection outweighed the clear risk of harm to the public.
I believe we would have a factual show of it.
So it's not the question of the words reasonably prudent officer, it's the fact of the narrow lane versus intersection.
Yes. The scope of Mr. Ramsey's focus is too narrow.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Holmes will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. First of all, Your Honor, we can win this case in one of two ways. Let's talk about what Mr. Smith, the expert for the petitioner, didn't say. That's really important in this case, what he didn't say. I'm going to read, I think it's part of the record as well, the last sentence in his affidavit says, it is my opinion that a reasonable police officer under the same circumstances could have chosen the route selected by Officer Waterwitz and could have elected to proceed on an emergency basis. He doesn't say that he would have been competent to enter that third lane if he couldn't see the traffic. That's what he doesn't say. And evidently, this officer must be a pretty honest sort because he didn't say that.
So you don't think that an officer is entitled to official immunity if the plaintiff shows a tribal issue on negligence?
Well,
is that right?
I think the word negligence just is foreign and kind of confuses this whole analysis on good faith. I think we need to throw out the word negligence and concentrate on the defendant's acts. One of the acts...
Well, can you do that? I mean, you did claim that the officer was negligent, didn't you?
That's the basis of the lawsuit, yes, sir. But it doesn't figure in the analysis of good faith, as Chambers' opinion said. But you still have to concentrate on the acts, regardless if they're negligent or not. And that's our position.
So if you show, if you have an expert who says that no reasonable officer would have entered the intersection under these circumstances, that not only presents a issue of fact on negligence, but also presents an issue of fact on good faith.
On good faith, that's correct. And that's why...
Even though Chambers says, speaks in terms of could have rather than would have.
That's correct. That's what it does say could have.
And you don't, but you think that those are interchangeable?
No, sir. I think the heightened burden of proof for a plaintiff to avoid summary judgment in an official immunity case protects the police officer in this case. And there are several cases that have been cited by my opponents that illustrate that. There's a case in Houston, I believe it's County of Paris versus Ocoa, where a suspect apparently jumped the curb or did something similar to that traffic violation of some sort. The officer gave chase, apparently in a safe area, a rural-type area, if there is such a thing in Houston. As the chase proceeded, it got more dangerous. It proceeded to a very dangerous intersection, heavily trafficked. What did the officer do? They terminated the pursuit, which is exactly what they were supposed to do, and that's what this court is telling officers out there, the good ones, the ones that act in good faith, and I'm an ex-policeman, so is Mr. Looney, that if you act in good faith, you don't have anything to worry about. It's those very small minority of officers who act in bad faith that we want out of the system. And that's what your opinion, Judge Corn, did. And elevating that burden of proof makes it very, very, very difficult for us to defeat official immunity because of the increased burden.
But if you can do it by merely having an expert say no reasonable officer would have entered the intersection under these circumstances, what's left of official immunity?
could have would be the correct. If you could find an expert to say that no reasonable officer could have.
Right. Well, I said would have, and that's what your expert, the term that your expert used in this case, wasn't it?
I think that the terms are interchangeable, and there's no magic words.
Well, and if they are interchangeable, then all you have to do is show a tribal issue of negligence, and there is no official immunity, right?
No, sir, I disagree. It's not an issue of negligence. It's just an issue of good faith versus bad faith. The negligence is not a part of it. That's just a word, a term. We need to concentrate on the acts of the officers, and that's what we did in this case. And our expert, Officer Ramsey, well, ex-Officer Ramsey, stated very clearly in his affidavit that no reasonably prudent officer under the same or similar circumstances could have believed that entering the inside lane when he could not see any possible traffic outweighed the clear risk of harm to the public in entering that lane when he did. It's very clear. And the Court of Appeals in this case said that was more than sufficient to create a fact issue to avoid summary judgment in that case on the right. And their example that they gave, and the opinion was very good, the school zone case. When you initially decide to pursue, that decision may be fine in good faith for a traffic violation, a DWI, whatever. A robbery suspect doesn't matter. But, as one of the justices pointed out, the circumstances change. And there's always a process going on, reevaluating where you are, what the conditions are.
But if you divide that up into too many segments.
I'm sorry?
If you divide that up into too many segments,
yes.
The one where the segment where something bad happens always looks like something no reasonable person should have done.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor, because the increased burden of proof in the Chambers case, I think it would be extremely hard to find an expert to say that. Well, I can't think of a good example now. There's some cases where I disagree with have been decided in other courts where I think immunity should have been provided. And the problem in those cases comes into play when the city or the county or whatever the case may be doesn't provide enough proof to establish good faith that shifts the burden over to the plaintiff to negate.
Do you agree with your opponent that if the officer in this case had been trying to get to a Luby's to stop the shootout, that would put a different complexion on this particular incident?
No, Your Honor, and this is why. Because what good is a police officer to anybody if he doesn't get there at all? None. He doesn't do anybody.
But you've got to take some risk. I mean, the only question is how much, isn't it?
Well,
and if you're chasing the jaywalker, surely you don't have to pursue it with quite the frenzy that you would if there were a mass murder taking.
Well, that's correct. In this case, this was it turned out to be a bike theft, but I don't think that's really relevant. The call now is theft of progress. I think that is relevant. The fact that this call was over 3 miles away, and anybody that's ever been on Valley Mills, anybody who went to Baylor has been there, you can't get anywhere very fast to Valley Mills, especially 3 miles away. So does that risk in entering that lane outweigh the danger to the public? I don't think so. And Officer Ramsey concludes that as well, and I agree with him. Now, as I stated earlier, it's our position that my opponents in this case hadn't even established this debate because of what their expert did not say. So really, in theory, we don't even get to what we provided as proof because we went right here. They didn't address the appropriate standard applied in Chambers at the beginning. But if the court feels like they have reached that or met that burden, then we go to see what Officer Ramsey said. What he said is unequivocal, and no one can misinterpret this. The man was acting in bad faith when he entered that lane when he knew he couldn't see any possible traffic that came along. That is bad faith. The Chambers opinion and the Chambers test works. It works. It protects the good officer. It's very difficult to overcome official immunity because of the increased burden of proof. And it works. It protects the good and it weeds out the bad. Now, what do we want to tell our police officers out there? My opponents want you to believe that if the initial decision is made in good faith and anything that happens after that, no matter how reckless he is or what he does, is going to be protected by official immunity. That cannot be the law, nor should it ever be the law in this state. There are two competing interests, as Justice Cornyn pointed out in his opinion. And it's a very difficult burden to try to satisfy both of the interests. You've got the motoring public.
You disagree on a little narrower ground than that. That may be one of the arguments that your opponent makes, but the narrower ground is that if you're going to divide up the analysis into segments of occurrence and time, then at least as to those segments, you have to look at the overarching purpose. And that's where you disagree.
Yes.
You disagree that trying to get to a shootout at Luby's would justify entering into the lane in these circumstances.
Well, you're right. I think you have to take the totality of the circumstances. But what they're leaving out, the most important part, the part that caused the accident in the first place. So I think you're right. I see your point that you should take in consideration why he's going where he's going and all that. But until, like you said, if it's a Luby's shootout type, you're going to take some risks. That is true.
But not this one.
Not this one, Your Honor. No, sir. Absolutely not. Now, there are several cases that were not discussed, I guess because of time considerations, but there's a case that the opponent cited in their brief called, I think I'm pronouncing it right, Galea versus Schreiber. This is a good case to show that Chambers works to protect the good officers. And that's what we want to do because of the competing interests. You have the motoring public on one side, and you have protection of the police officers on the other. And it's very difficult to address both of those competing interests in one test. But y'all were able to do that. You worked very diligently, very hard to do that, and you did it. You came up with a test that protects both. That way, innocent bystanders that are run down by officers acting in bad faith, they have a remedy. But otherwise, they wouldn't. To have it my opponent's way, there would always be official immunity. No matter what, there would always be official immunity. And this court doesn't want that because you work too hard in the Chambers case to protect against that. Now, the Galea versus Schreiber case is a case where an officer approached a allegedly intoxicated person at an American Legion Hall and decided, with his discretion, not to arrest him. He released him to a female minor, and later on, that intoxicated person murdered the plaintiff's wife. So the cause of action was, well, you should have arrested him. If you'd arrested him, this wouldn't have happened. Well, the court held that there was an official immunity in that case, and well, they should, but they were talking about the act of arresting. Now, my opponent said you shouldn't look at the acts. You only look at the decision. Well, there's no acts without the person having a decision, isn't there? So we have to include the acts of the officer in this case.
The concern in and after Chambers is that almost anybody can come in with an affidavit that says no reasonable officer could have made this decision. Why isn't that still a concern?
I think it would be a concern, Your Honor, but I think that goes to the competency of the expert, which is not before the court.
The whole point is not to try all these cases. The whole point is that some of them go out on summary judgment because good faith is established as a matter of law.
Correct.
How do you avoid that?
Again, it goes to the credibility of the particular experts, but I suppose if you paid someone enough money, I suppose you could find some expert out there somewhere that would say what you want them to say. That happens in civil cases all the time. I don't know the answer. I don't know what the solution to that is. Hopefully the trial court will weed that out when the time comes. If it's a frivolous claim or a bad claim, it's going to be weeded out.
That motion for new trial time? Or?
Could be. Because that goes to the competency of the experts. And what we're talking about here is whether, first of all, whether the petitioner has met the burden of good faith.
But competency can't be judged on the affidavit if they use the last findings to get the jury trial.
That's correct. And they did take my expert's deposition, and they didn't attack. They had an opportunity to attack the competency of my expert, and they didn't do that. And I didn't attack theirs.
But this isn't like Daubert, where you can judge whether the science is accepted or not. I mean,
that's
anybody that's investigated 4,000 accidents is going to be able to file an affidavit.
And I have as well myself. I've done the same thing. I have exactly the same experience other than all the professional schools that Officer Ranch has gone to. And in fact, we worked together at one point in time. So I don't know the answer to that, Mr. Justice, about how you weed out the incompetent from the competent. I think you have to have a trial.
You said that Chambers had greatly increased the difficulty of these cases given trial in the American Texas. Have you seen any studies on that, or is that purely just a person out there in the business?
Well, it's a person who has been in the law enforcement community working for 10 years, and I know what the attitudes are. I know how officers think, because in some ways I still am a police officer in some ways. I still think that way. And police officers, I can tell you this, will take everything that you give them and push the envelope. That is their nature. That will happen. So by a blanket coverage of official immunity in every case, we're going to be lining up bodies because they will push the limit. We want to weed out the bad officers who act in bad faith. There's very few. There's very few of those. And we'll keep the good ones and protect the good ones, like the ones in the Harris County case, where they terminated the pursuit. That's exactly what you're supposed to do in that situation. And there are a lot of officers out there who do just that. Those are the ones we want to protect. That didn't happen in this case. This case did not happen. This case, this officer acted in bad faith.
So is it your conclusion then that the officer in this case was incompetent because he didn't terminate when he made the left turn?
Yes, sir, I am saying
and that. So doesn't that focus on one specific act, which is what the complaint is by?
It's focusing on, because that's the only other act that exists, and that's the only other act. They're focusing on the initial decision to take them.
And then, I presume, by the way, you argue then, in your view, that was a bad faith decision on the officer's part, which makes him incompetent.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is correct. That's what our expert testified to through the affidavit and deposition. And it's unopposed. It's undisputed.
Well, that's opinion evidence, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
But this is a summary judgment that was pointed out earlier.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is correct.
Thank you.
I would strongly ask the court to affirm the judgment below because it was fair, accurate. It correctly applies the Chambers test in this case, which is a good test. It's a good test. It elevates the burden of proof, and that protects good police officers, and it works. And I'm asking that the court uphold the decision below and affirm the judgment below.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
In addition to the stereotype of police officers here today, the respondent says that they don't feel that negligence should play a role in the analysis of immunity or good faith, but in the last sentence, on the first full paragraph, page 9 of their brief, they say, and I quote, clearly, speaking about the Chamber's analysis of Article 6701B, Section 24E, clearly this must be interpreted to mean that negligent acts may be considered in the good faith analysis. What the respondents are urging here is very much like what was urged in Chambers with respect to Article 6701B, and the court in that case said that in determining whether or not an officer acts with discretion, we do not look at whether or not he has the discretion to commit a wrongful act. We look at whether or not the function he is performing is discretionary. The court's words, and I'll paraphrase them, were the application of 6701B, as was being urged by the respondents in that case, inexorably leads to the conclusion that an officer is not entitled to immunity if he is negligent. The same thing in a different suit of clothes is being urged in this case. Just as discretion should not be looked at in terms of the discretion to commit a wrongful act, good faith shouldn't be looked at in terms of can a wrongful act be committed in good faith. What we have to look at is what the officer was trying to accomplish and why. And then if he committed a negligent act in the process, he's protected if he acted in good faith. That's well, why.
How about if it's more than negligent and it's reckless?
This court also said in the Chambers case that reckless conduct, grossly negligent conduct, does not serve to defeat immunity. As I read the Chambers case, the conduct has to rise to the level of plain incompetence, something, in my opinion, that shocks the conscience, and we don't have that here.
And that's more than gross negligence or reckless conduct?
I believe so, Your Honor. Our position, stated again briefly, is that the scope of the inquiry, from Mr. Ramsey's point of view, is too narrow. It limits itself to a single act that may or may not have been negligent, but uses that allegedly negligent act, which is one of the negligent acts that we've been sued on, uses that act to attempt to defeat the union.
Counsel, on page 9 and 10 of the slip opinion, the Court of Appeals quotes or basically summarizes what Mr. Ramsey testified to and uses the terms would have entered the intersection. Yet your opponent on page 4 says the Court of Appeals didn't give him his strongest summary judgment evidence and quotes Mr. Ramsey saying, quote, no reasonably prudent officer under the same or similar circumstances could have believed that entering the inside lane when he could not see any possible traffic outweighed the clear risk of harm to the public in entering that lane when he did. And I take it you would say that still doesn't raise an issue of fact on good faith.
No, Your Honor, I still think the scope of the inquiry is too narrow based on focusing on one allegedly wrongful act.
And it would, in order to raise a question, it would have to go to his decision.
His decision,
as opposed to the manner in which he was operating his vehicle.
His decision and the manner in which he carried it out. What he decided to do and how he proceeded to do it.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments for today. All of these arguments are submitted on briefs and oral arguments. Marshall will now please adjourn the court.